everyone. Thanks so much for joining us today for our webinar. Does increasing tobacco tax increase contraband? Debunking the taxation and contraband tobacco myth. And today I'm joined by Dr. Robert Schwartz and Dr. Bo Zhang, who are going to lead the presentation. And my name is Sarah Pinder. So let's get started on the call today. The first thing I want to note for you is that the webinar is going to be recorded today for future use. As well, the lines are muted, so the way to respond to this presentation is through the chat box. That's in the lower left-hand corner of your screen. We'd love for you to enter your questions into the chat box, and we can flag those for the presenters in that way. As well, it would be great if you could save your questions for the end of the webinar for Dr. Schwartz and Dr. Zhang to respond to at that time. And one more follow-up piece of work for us to do together before we start the webinar. We're doing a poll today to see who's in attendance. How many people are attending today's webinar with you? Could you count yourself as well as anybody else in the room who is sharing your login credentials today? And if you have five or more people in attendance with you in the room, please enter that number in the chat box. I'll just give you a moment to answer that polling question, and then we'll move forward. Thanks so much for participating in our poll. And now I'll introduce our speakers. Dr. Rob Schwartz is the Executive Director of the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit, and he's an Associate Professor at the Dalhousie School of Public Health at the University of Toronto with interest in research, evaluation, and knowledge exchange. And our second presenter is Dr. Bo Zhang. Dr. Zhang is a Senior Research Officer with OTRU. Bo received her master's degree in public health from Adelaide University in Australia and a PhD in epidemiology from Dalhousie School of Public Health at the University of Toronto. Her research interests include the epidemiology of tobacco use, the impact of tobacco policy on health, the role of tobacco in mortality and morbidity, and nicotine replacement therapy and health professional advice for smoking cessation in the general population. So I'll hand it over to Dr. Schwartz and Dr. Zhang today to lead our presentation.
Thank you, Sarah. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us today. We're delighted to be able to present the results of a very important report that we've done. Why very important? Not because we think that we're fantastic, but very important because we hope that it will actually have an influence and debunk this ridiculous myth out there that states that if you increase the price of cigarettes, if you increase taxes on cigarettes, then you are going to increase the contraband market substantially and the benefits will not be seen from the tax increase. So I can't see you and you can't see me, but raise your hand anyhow if you believe that increasing taxes is an effective tobacco control measure. Okay, I venture to say that just about everybody who's listening has raised their hand. Okay, and we also know that most jurisdictions in Canada, and Ontario is the most guilty amongst them, have not had a substantial increase in taxes in many, many years. Why is that? Why do we not increase taxes substantially? I don't mean 5%, I don't mean 10%, I don't mean 20%. Substantial increase in taxes should be double. We should increase the price of cigarettes by at least 100% by tripling the tax rates if we want to see substantial decreases in the use of tobacco. Does anybody disagree that we should see substantial decreases in the use of tobacco? I venture to say no. There's no good thing about this product. So why is it then that we don't raise taxes substantially? That's why we're here today. The tobacco industry has perpetrated a myth. And this myth is that if we raise tobacco taxes, then we are only going to increase the problem of contraband, and we will not see substantial benefits from this increase in taxes. Many people don't like that idea. Those in the government who are responsible for collecting revenues are afraid that if we increase taxes and we increase contraband, then we're not going to see the revenues that the government desperately needs. We also are concerned that if we increase contraband, then we're not going to see the benefit of decreased tobacco use that should come from tobacco, from the increase in taxes. So we're here today to talk about three things. These are the three things that we hope that you will learn by the end of the webinar. Firstly, what is the actual magnitude of the contraband cigarette problem? Well, that is a very tough question, and we're going to give you one answer to it. Does increasing tobacco taxes necessarily lead to an increase in contraband tobacco? The answer is obviously no, and we're going to show you why, because that is not intuitive. And what does recent data tell us about the impact of taxation on contraband tobacco in Ontario and in Quebec, and actually in Canada as a whole? So all of this data is going to help debunk the myth. I'm going to start just by showing you a slide that I hope you can read that estimates contraband cigarette use in Ontario. Now, as I said, estimating the magnitude of the contraband problem is really difficult. This is, in my opinion, the best estimate that we have. It comes from CTUMS, the Canadian Tobacco Use Monitoring Survey, a survey that Health Canada has been running for many years now. And it comes from one question, actually two questions on the survey, but the most important question is, in the past 6 months, did you buy cigarettes that may have been smuggled? Did you buy cigarettes that may have been smuggled in the past 6 months? So pay attention, this is only at all in the past 6 months, which means that it may actually overestimate. It's not a prevalence use of contraband tobacco, because it means if you ever used contraband, then you're answering yes to in the past 6 months. Then you're answering yes to that question. What the graph shows us is that in 2012, we were at approximately 18% of the respondents. These are people 15 years and over. So about 18% of those respondents had purchased contraband cigarettes in the past 6 months. We also see that generally the line is a downward trend. That number was 31% in 2008. And has gone down to somewhere around 23% to 19.5% and then 18.5% in 2012. Our analysis of the data demonstrates this is actually a significant decrease. And later on, we're going to show you, well, how is that decrease in contraband use actually related to what's happened with taxation? But we're going to just foreshadow for now and keep you in suspense as we go through the rest of the slides. This is just to give you a sense that, you know, somewhere south of 20% of respondents 15 years and over are using are telling us that they've purchased contraband cigarettes. You will have heard all kinds of estimates. Most of the estimates that you hear come from where? From the tobacco industry. Sometimes the tobacco industry is posing as the convenience store association, but they will tell you 40%, 30%, 20%. And depending on the whim of the day, on what they think is going to be strategic for them to say, they will give you a different estimate. Just so you know, we have asked the tobacco industry and the convenience store association each time they produce a report to please provide us their specific methodology for the report. The little bit that they have provided has been completely inadequate. So there's no question in our minds that the tobacco industry estimates of contraband are not valid. I think that we can take this estimate as the best one that we have, even though it has its limitations. So the myth is that high taxes, and I have to add here, other tobacco control policies will drive contraband tobacco. So if you've been paying attention recently, the whole debate about banning flavors and in particular banning menthol cigarettes, has led to further fear-mongering about how if we ban menthol cigarettes, then we're going to drive all those kids, all those youngsters who pick up menthol are going to go start, use contraband instead. We've heard that argument when we talk about decreasing the availability of cigarettes, so decreasing retail outlet density. Well, people say, well, they'll just go and get it from the contraband market. And certainly that is a main argument against raising tobacco taxes. It's not just the tobacco industry that is perpetrating this myth. We also have a conservative institute called the Fraser Institute coming out in 2010 with a report, and this is a quote from that report. It says, "Federal and provincial tobacco excise taxes are the primary precipitating factor in the growth of contraband tobacco." Our job today is to demonstrate to you that this is nothing but a myth. We are going to go through and tear apart all of the arguments in the Fraser Report that try to perpetrate this myth. They bring evidence, and we looked very carefully at that evidence, and we're going to demonstrate to you that they are, how do I say this nicely? They're full of it. So we're going to start, before we get directly to that, by just showing you what do we know from the international research on contraband. Afterwards, that'll be followed by looking specifically at the Fraser Institute report arguments and debunking those. And then we are going to present some data that we have from Ontario and Quebec that is further going to support our arguments. So what does the international research say? It is the research that we found has three main kinds of studies. The first are these intervention studies that are on the slide in front of you. The second are correlational studies. And the last are simulation studies. So we're going to go through one slide on each of these. We're not going to go into the nitty-gritty details of the studies. Just want to let you know that we did a systematic search of the literature. We then analyzed that literature carefully, and we have come up with these synthesis slides that tell you what the literature is saying. When you increase the price of tobacco, what happens to contraband? So these three studies that are displayed on the slide in front of you synthesize the findings of three studies from 2002 through to 2010. They show what happened in California and in several other American states when in reality, in the real world, the price of tobacco taxes were increased. What happened to the contraband market as a result? So the first study, for example, if you just look at the far right-hand column on impact, shows that only 5% avoided the tax hike by purchasing low or non-tax cigarettes. The second study by Farrelly in 2003 shows you something in addition to the fact that only a small proportion of smokers went over to contraband. It found that the legal sales decreased immediately, but they resumed to settle at a new level within 2 to 4 months, and that new level was very close to the original level. So we'll show you later that there are several studies now that demonstrate that after you increase the price of tax, there is a bit of a surge. There is some leakage to contraband. So this isn't huge numbers. We're not talking about 75 or 50 or 25 or even 15% of smokers going over to contraband. We're talking about 5% or less of smokers going over to contraband. And then the new finding in this Farrelly study is that they actually go to contraband only for a short period of time. And then they return to their usual legal purchases. Why is that? Well, the hypothesis is that it's actually easier to purchase your legal cigarettes. it's not so easy to access the contraband market all the time. You're taking some risk. You're breaking the law. You need to travel. They're not always available. You may have purchased a contraband. You weren't happy with them. They didn't taste good. They didn't have the right packaging. You didn't feel right about it. Okay, so you know, a knee-jerk reaction may be to go over to contraband, but after some time, the studies demonstrate that most of those people, the large majority of the people who went over to contraband, actually return. And that the next study from Dekicha, I think that's the right pronunciation, in 2010, so it shows the same thing. That 12 months after the increases in taxes, there actually was no significant change in the contraband activity level for using contraband cigarettes. So those are the first set of studies. And you know what I would say? Even if we didn't have the other studies, this is pretty strong evidence. But there's more. We have correlational studies. So these are not studies of intervention, so of changes in a single jurisdiction in the taxes, but they are comparisons amongst countries or amongst jurisdictions in the level of contraband as opposed to the level of tobacco taxation. What these studies, and we have three of them here, one from 98, one from 2000, and further down on the slide from 2011, and they all examine differences amongst countries in contraband tobacco activity, and they compare the level of contraband activity to the relative level of tobacco taxation. They find no correlation between tobacco taxation and contraband. This was found in a 9-country study, and then you see countries like Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and the United Kingdom have very expensive cigarettes, i.e. they have high taxes on cigarettes, but they don't have a large smuggling problem. Similar findings in this study of Africa found that there is no difference, that the smuggling that they find in different countries is not caused by differences in tax levels amongst those countries in Africa. So two types of studies so far, the intervention studies and the correlational studies, demonstrating quite clearly that it does not appear to be that increased taxes are leading to increased contraband. The last type of study we have are simulation studies. So these are the kinds of studies that my colleague Bo, who's going to speak with you shortly, likes to do. She's an epidemiologist. She's a modeler at this point. She developed our SimSmoke Ontario model for us. And these, you take a bunch of data and you basically play with it. You say, well, what's the level of taxes now? What's the level of consumption of cigarettes now? What's the level of contraband now? You plug in a bunch of coefficients based on the evidence, the kind of evidence that we just showed you in the two previous slides, and you estimate what will happen if we increase taxes by X, by how much are we going to change the use of contraband. I haven't actually mentioned very much until now. There are really three variables that we're playing with. There's the changes in the tobacco tax, one. There's the change in consumption or prevalence of tobacco use, two. And there's the change in revenues and government revenues from taxation. So us public health folks don't usually pay a whole lot of attention to that last variable of tax revenues, but there are good people in our jurisdictions who are very concerned about that. They don't want to see revenues going down. And actually, when they increase taxes, when the government decides to increase taxes, one of the things they're generally looking for is not only a public health effect, but they're also looking to improve the province or the country's fiscal situation. So they're very concerned about impact on tax revenues. And what these simulation studies are showing us, this is the first one, is that generally increasing cigarette taxes will result in minor increases in contraband, minor. Okay, just like our previous study showed, in lower cigarette consumption, that's good. That's what we're looking for. That's why we want to increase the taxes. And a net population health gain. What does that mean? It means that small leakage of people going over to contraband cigarettes is far outweighed by the decrease in consumption of cigarettes by all smokers. Far outweighed. So there's a net population health gain. And not only that, but it also, that increase in taxes also leads to increased tax revenues. It's a win-win-win situation. Okay, we win on all three of those counts. One more simulation study, this one from 2010. Again, now this one adds an interesting element. Okay, and in the end, from our various studies, we agree with many authors of studies who say that when you increase cigarette taxes, it's crucial, absolutely crucial, to improve anti-contraband enforcement at the same time. Okay, in order to result in those same results that we saw in the last slide. Okay, it means that we need to do two things at the same time. Yeah, if we triple taxes and do nothing to enforce anti-contraband measures, then we probably are going to have a problem on our hands. Okay, if we increase the taxes and at the same time we push the gas pedal on anti-contraband, then we are going to have a win-win-win situation. Those are the findings of the three types of simulation studies. This slide is really important because in the heads of many Canadians, many, many Canadians, is the experience of the 1990s. The 1990s is a very different situation than the 2000 and the 2010s and the two and 2015. What happened in 1990? Okay, when there was a tax increase, okay, what happened then is that the tobacco industry perpetrated, they were the smugglers, okay, they're the ones who brought all of the illegal tobacco into Canada, and they admitted so. In the 1990s, they paid $550 million in fines, should have paid a lot more, okay, they should have been subject to criminal investigation, but they admitted guilty in 1990 to actually being the supplier of contraband tobacco. What does that mean for our story? It means that we don't need to be afraid of that kind of smuggling again in Canada because, well, I hope, because the government now knows that it needs to keep a very close watch on what the tobacco industry is doing. It needs to have those anti-contraband measures in place so that when taxes are increased, the tobacco industry is squeezed, so they're not able to perpetrate and to become the suppliers of contraband tobacco. It is possible. It's feasible. The government knows how to do it. They know where it's coming from, and they know how to stop this. Similar thing happened, by the way, in Europe, where in countries like the UK, Spain, and Italy, the tobacco industry took advantage in increases in tobacco taxes to create and to supply contraband markets. And what's important here is you see that government action ended this. So government knows how to end this type of industry-perpetrated contraband. Finally, just finally on the literature front, IARC is the International Agency for Research on Cancer. I think I got that right. IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Okay, this is sort of the most prestigious institute in the world that does research on cancer. The IARC reports are famous for being sort of the final word on what the evidence says in anything related to cancer. They have demonstrated very clearly, and there are tons of systematic reviews and studies and this expert panel from IARC, which it demonstrates conclusively that tax avoidance and evasion reduce but do not eliminate the public health and revenue impact of tobacco increases. When tobacco tax increases, tobacco use falls. Revenues rise, even when there is increased tax avoidance and tax evasion. In other words, that small leakage to contraband that may happen despite the anti-contraband measures is much, much smaller in its effect on either public health or taxes than is the reduction in tobacco use that is caused by the tobacco tax increase. The message is simple. The evidence is clear. It is really clear-cut, and the myth that the tobacco industry has been perpetrating needs to be debunked, needs to be argued against using this evidence at every opportunity. So one might ask, well, if that's the case, then why do we have contraband tobacco, in particularly in places like Ontario? And why is it that we have, that the tax rate isn't, according to these studies, the major reason for differences amongst jurisdictions in the level of the contraband activity? Well, because there are other causes of smuggling. And don't forget, you know, smuggling isn't only about tobacco. But there's contraband, you know, people have contraband designer bags, you know, purses and watches and you name it. Well, there, you know, there's several studies about the causes of contraband activity, including tobacco. And they're listed on this slide. What are the other causes? General corruption, tolerance of tobacco sales, weak state capacity to enforce are all more important than price or tax increases. Furthermore, we have a report in 2007 here in our own Canada, commissioned by Health Canada. Misconceptions of legal purchases of cigarette taxes on First Nations reserves for the general public. So their study demonstrated that actually most people buying contraband from reserves didn't actually understand that this is an illegal activity, that these are not legal products. Lack of publicity or information about this being illegal. Easy access. Lack of police presence and enforcement, and open advertising of discount cigarettes on highways. I mean, it's unbelievable. Those of you from Ontario, if you know Muskoka, I was there 3 weeks ago. You know, cheap smokes all over the highway that I was driving on, pulled into one, and there they were, in front of my very own eyes. So these are the causes. The cause is the availability, is the tolerance, the public tolerance for it, the government tolerance for it. We know where it's coming from. We know how it's getting there. It can be stopped, and by keeping taxes low as a purported measure to keep contraband low, we are doing the public a huge disfavor. I will go so far as to say as this is unethical. Because we know that if we increase the price of tobacco substantially, we are definitely going to save lives, many, many, many lives. It should be done. Now, we are going to move into talking very specifically about that Fraser Institute report. And why do we do this? Because this is, you know, this is as if a very distinguished institute, and it claims to be evidence-informed. They bring citations in their report. And therefore, we find it very important to debunk each of these statements. And we hope this will be helpful to everybody out there when you are working to have tobacco prices increased. So we're going to do a bit of role-playing here. I'm going to play the bad guy. I'm going to read the statements that are listed, that are written in the Fraser Report, and Dr. Bojang is going to be the good guy, which makes perfect sense because she's the one who actually went through the literature and debunked each of these statements. So here we go. Statement one. By the early 1990s, this is the Fraser Institute speaking. By the early 1990s, the trade in contraband cigarettes was flourishing as tobacco excise taxes rose steadily. And we, i.e. the Fraser Institute, cite Rob Cunningham, 1996.
However, in fact, the report in 1996 by Dr. Cunningham says that The major factor contributing to the rise of smuggling was a dramatic increase in manufacturer exports of Canadian cigarettes to the United States, and the return to Canada was as contraband, a fact openly acknowledged by the industry, and more than 90% of the contraband consisted of products originally manufactured in Canada. So this is the true conclusion of this report, but the Freezer's statement misused this statement from this report. So it is the tobacco industry that was the primary cause of the substantial increase in smuggling of cigarettes in the early 1990s in Canada.
Two, the greater volume of contraband sales coincides with the reinstatement of relatively high tobacco taxes. And this is found in the RCMP, Canada Department of Finance reports. Thus, the smuggling and trafficking of contraband cigarettes is an unintended consequence of Canadian tax policy.
So actually, we conducted the analysis, and we will present this analysis later. And we found that the RCMP says the data of contraband cigarettes has significantly declined since 2008 in Canada, and also says the data of contraband cigarettes do not correspond with changes in tobacco taxes in Canada. So that's the truth.
Three, researchers have consistently found that demand for tobacco products is relatively unresponsive to changes in price, quoting Frank Chalupka, 2000.
So what actually the study by Chalupka says, the study concludes that people are responsive to cigarette price, and the price elasticity of demand from recent studies was between negative 0.3 to negative 0.5. That means a 10% increase in cigarette price will result in 3 to 5% reduction in cigarette consumption. But this could be as high as negative 1.3 for youth and negative 1.1 for college students. So younger people are more responsive to cigarette prices. Although technically a price elasticity of less than 1 is considered relatively inelastic, but this statement is a blatant mispresentation of the author's work. Demand for tobacco is relatively price inelastic due to its addictive nature. A recent study by Jia and Pito, published in New England Journal of Medicine in 2014, demonstrated that doubling tobacco price will decrease consumption by one-third. So people are responsive to cigarette price.
Four, just as anti-smoking advocates contend that higher taxes induce smokers to quit, they also claim that fewer smokers will quit if tobacco taxes are lowered. However, this assertion has not been proven. In fact, the opposite might be true. Despite the substantial cuts in tobacco excise taxes in 1994, smoking prevalence amongst Canadians has continuously decreased. One recent study found that the 1994 tax cuts had no major impact on either adult or youth smoking in Canada. These tax cuts certainly did not encourage greater tobacco consumption, and that's quoting Willet, 2010. Conversely, another study found that the 1994 repeal of the taxes did, in fact, slow the pace of decline in tobacco prevalence across Canada. Therefore, the impact of tobacco tax cuts on smoking prevalence remains uncertain.
By literature review, we found actually this statement ignores a wealth of Canadian studies about tax cuts and smoking in Canada. Many Canadian studies show that tax cut in the 1990s in Canada had an adverse impact on smoking rates in youth and young adults. And a recent Canadian study reported a tax elasticity of negative 0.23 for the whole population, negative 0.34 for middle-aged men, negative 0.56 for those with low education, and even higher for male youth using representative Canadian survey data. So those data shows Canadian smokers are responsive to tax increases, especially young people and those people with low education.
5. Reducing the prevalence of smoking amongst teens has been a long-standing priority for public health officials. However, the evidence suggests that the use of taxes to curb teen smoking has had unintended consequences. That is, teens have easy access to the black market for cigarettes, in part because of tax policies that are intended to reduce smoking prevalence.
The fact is, Canadian studies clearly show that decreasing tobacco taxes increase youth smoking. Tax increase results in decreases in youth smoking, and youth are more responsive to cigarette prices than adults.
How are we doing so far? We're almost finished with the Fraser Institute. 6. It is extremely difficult to distinguish between the effects on smoking prevalence of higher tobacco taxes, public awareness of smoking risks, and restrictions on tobacco sales and use. And based on the available evidence, we conclude that while tobacco taxes clearly reduce lawful tobacco sales, their impact on smoking prevalence is less clear, especially when the effects of other anti-smoking initiatives are taken into consideration.
However, same smoke model is a well-validated simulation model that has been used in many countries and states, and also we conducted the Ontario data. All these studies show the taxation policy has played an important role in reducing smoking prevalence and smoking-related deaths, both individually and in combination with other tobacco control policies. So this statement is not supported by the facts.
So overall, the Fraser Institute has admitted substantial evidence, and the statements in the report are truly not supported by the evidence that they cite in the report. So we looked at every piece of evidence that they cited, and they misrepresented, drastically misrepresented the data and the evidence and the conclusions of those studies. Now we're going to present, now that we've gone through the literature, we've debunked all of the statements in the Fraser Institute report, we're going to show you some analyses that Bo conducted about what's happened in fact in Ontario and in Quebec when over the past few years, what's happened when prices of tobacco have changed, what's happened to the contraband market.
So this slide shows the estimated contraband cigarette use, cigarette price, and the tax in Ontario from 2008 to 2012. This figure has three lines. The top line in yellow shows the cigarette price of 200 cigarettes from $81 in 2008 to almost $84 in 2012. And we found that actually, the cigarette price stayed relatively stable during this period. The p-value for this line was greater than 0.05. And the next line in green in the middle is for cigarette tax in Ontario. This line shows slightly increased from $50 in 2008 to almost $53 for 200 cigarettes in 2012. And the p-value for the linear trend shows the increase in tobacco tax during this period was significant. And the last line in brown, the lower line, shows the any purchase of contraband cigarettes. Rob presented in the previous slide. I want to point out that this line shows any purchase. It's not usual use of contraband. A study by our colleagues shows that any purchase is overrepresented of usual use of contraband. In that study, they used a representative sample of Ontario smokers, and they found that less than 50% of any purchasers of contraband cigarettes are use of contraband. So these figures on this slide may overestimate the usual use of contraband in Ontario.
But that would be
less than
common over the course of the years.
Yes.
Right. It doesn't say anything about the trend.
No, yeah. Doesn't. And this slide shows Ontario tobacco tax, tax revenue, smoking prevalence, and the consumption during 7 years from 2007 to 2013. During the 7 years period, the tobacco tax was relatively stable, so the p-value for the trend was greater than 0.05. Meantime, tax revenue during this period of time was relatively stable too. The p-value for the trend was greater than 0.05. However, smoking prevalence was significantly declined from almost 20% in 2007 to close to 17%, and the p-value for the linear trend was less than 0.05. That means the decline was statistically significant. The last column shows the population consumption of millions of cigarettes per day. And those figures showing a significant decline during the 7 years from 26 million cigarettes per day among all Ontario smokers to in 2007 to close to 24 million cigarettes per day. And the p-value for the declining was significant, less than 0.01. So those figures shows the Ontario tobacco tax and the revenue kept stable during this period, but smoking prevalence and the consumption have been declining significantly, further suggesting that there was no significant contraband issue in Ontario during this period of time.
So, you know, we in Ontario, we are afraid, or the government is afraid to do anything. Our next-door neighbors, we really don't have to go any further than Quebec and look at our next-door neighbors who have a similar contraband problem, you know, because sometimes the argument comes up, well, you know, what's been done in contraband in other jurisdictions doesn't apply to Ontario because it's a different problem. Quebec's contraband problem is very similar to that of Ontario. And Quebec, since 2008, has made a major effort to enforce anti-contraband measures. It's called Access, and they have seen a substantial reduction in illegal use of cigarettes. So the contraband rates in Quebec have gone down substantially. They have also had a decrease in tobacco consumption during this period of time. And what do you know, they have an increase in tax revenue. So they have even gone so far more recently, since 2012, as to raise taxes. So they've had three tobacco tax increases since 2012, two of them provincial and one of them federal. And despite these increases, because they have been pressing, as we said before, they've been squeezing on the anti-contraband measures, contraband has remained stable and tax revenue has increased. And you can see that in this lovely graph that we took straight out of the Quebec budget plan for 2014-15.
And this data shows the RCMP cigarette seizures data in Canada between 2008 and 2012. The red line shows the active seizure data in cartons or unmarked bags, and the white dashed line shows the trend. And during this period, the line was significant, showing the significant decline. On average, the each year about 150,000 cartons or unmarked bags per year decline during this period of time. And this is a slide shows the federal or provincial territorial tobacco tax rates per 2,000 cigarettes, 200 cigarettes as of April 2015. there are 13 groups of bars for the 10 provinces and 3 territories. In each group, we have 3 bars. The brown one shows the tobacco tax. The middle green bar shows the overall tax. And the yellow bar shows the retail price. And we can see that Ontario has the lowest brown bar. That means the provincial tobacco tax that was at $27, almost close to $28, even lower than Quebec. In terms of overall tax, the green bars, Ontario and Quebec have the lowest overall tobacco tax for cigarettes. And in terms of retail tax, cigarettes price, and also Ontario and Quebec have the lowest cigarette price among all provinces and territories. Yet these two provinces have the largest contraband issue in Canada, further showing that tobacco tax is not a major factor in Ontario or Quebec or Canada for the contraband issue.
So have we convinced you? We're open to questions in a minute. Just the take-home messages. The magnitude of contraband tobacco problem is generally overstated. The notion that increasing tobacco taxes necessarily leads to increasing contraband tobacco is false. Contraband use in Ontario is not correlated with changes in tobacco taxes. The benefits of increased tobacco taxes outweigh and add by far any minor increase in contraband use that might occur. And finally, this is important. Increasing tobacco taxes accompanied by enhanced enforcement and public education are the best policy option to decrease tobacco use, curb contraband tobacco, and added benefit of increased tobacco tax revenue at the same time. Our full report is available at that link. There's a press release also that we are linking to, and we are now open for questions and comments.
Thanks so much for your presentation. We'll give folks a moment to rally to ask their questions.
Any arguments? Maybe I can ask a question. What might you do with this information?
How will folks be applying the information that we've presented today to their work? Is there anything relevant that folks have been able to take home today? It might be interesting to share that with the group.
The evidence is so persuasive.
Do people know how to ask?
If you have questions or comments, you can enter them into the chat box on the left-hand side of the window. Okay, it looks like there's somebody chatting. One moment. Okay, we have a couple questions or statements. Great. Chris Cadwell says, the questions posed in the survey, have you consumed smuggled cigarettes within the past 6 months, may influence respondents to give false answers. Would you like to comment on that?
Okay. Actually, I conducted this analysis myself and found very few people and answer these questions. Most of the data we show here is based on the question, in the past 6 months, did you purchase any cigarettes from First Nation reserves? So I don't think it's really biased as the data we are showing here.
Right. So there are two questions on CTOMS.
Yeah. One is maybe smuggled. Very few people answer that question. It's most based on if you purchased cigarettes from First Nations.
Yeah, and It's quite possible, if I'm understanding the questioner, Chris, correctly, I think you're suggesting that this causes an underestimate because people don't want to admit to having purchased smuggled products. Quite possible. So as we said earlier, these data are limited. We don't know for sure what the prevalence is, but what's important for this particular question that we're asking about the relationship between tax and contraband is the trend over time. So the assumption is that whatever bias there is in the data is constant over the course of time. We have no reason to believe that it would not be. So there's a second question I see. This is already posted. So the link that is in the previous slide actually links to the report that is on the OTRU website. And we're happy also to provide further information as needed. Thank you, Sherry.
Oh, it looks like there's another couple questions. Great. From Fatha, what is the influence of e-cigarettes with contraband tobacco, i.e., are people likely to move to e-cigarettes if taxes rise rather than purchase cheaper contraband tobacco? This wasn't really an issue in the mid to late 90s.
Hi, Pat. I like the question. And the answer isn't known. One thing that we're finding in the research that we're doing now on e-cigarettes is that price is actually a barrier to using e-cigarettes because they are relatively expensive. And arguably, and I'm not going to presume that we know the answer to this, if smokers who are currently using regular cigarettes switch to e-cigarettes, then most people would say that that's a harm reduction measure, which wouldn't be a bad thing. So that doesn't relate directly to the contraband issue, but it is an interesting question.
And there's another comment from Matthew Bourgeois. Earlier in the presentation, you suggested that taxes should be doubled. Do you think that this should be done as a one-time increase or over a 4 to 5 year period in order to limit contraband, et cetera?
I think it's a great question, and I don't pretend to actually know the answer definitively because we don't have good real-world experience. We do know that countries... France is one that actually doubled the price of cigarettes in one shot, and they saw a significant reduction in tobacco use. Now, France doesn't have the same contraband market that we have here, so there isn't a I don't know the real, you know, the right answer to that question. Your guess is as good as mine. Let's put it that way.
Okay, we'll give folks one more moment maybe to ask any final questions or make any final comments they have for our presenters today. Okay, well, maybe we'll wrap it up here then. Thanks so much to Dr. Schwartz and Dr. Zhang for joining us today. I appreciated the presentation from you both very much. As well, we'd like to thank you all on the line for participating with us today. Your feedback's important to us to improve the quality of these webinars. A link to our webinar survey will be emailed to you following the webinar. If you could fill that out and send that in to us, we'd really appreciate it. So again, thanks so much for joining us today, and you can find out more information about PTCC at the contact info below. Thanks, everyone. Have a great afternoon. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.